centers of the site. So these are some of the things that we need to level. So that's the reason we have put that now, because SANSA and all of this, they belong to the Department of Science and Technology.
In agreement with our idea. And perhaps there is a possibility, if the BRICS countries and the European Union can work together and catch the United States on board. That's an important point. I'm not sure that every BRICS country is on the same line in this. So there's perhaps a special responsibility for South Africa as well. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Honourable Joan. I've got a few more contributions, and I will ask my team to keep it short.
Just a short remark on one point that was said in case of investment in the country to build jobs. Just let me give one figure I heard yesterday. European companies and European countries take the responsibility also in South Africa. For example, German companies, automobile companies, created about 100,000 jobs. They have teaching, they have education, they have training programs to educate young people being able to work in these. And that 100,000 jobs are just the jobs that are created directly, and not all these jobs, more and more jobs were created also around as services and other things. So I think we also take responsibility with our companies, not just to import, but also to take care of the people who use it and to build up jobs and create and implement companies here.
John? Thank you, Chairman. 3 points. China, Chinese investment. We in Europe are becoming fascinated by or fixated by China and its emerging role and importance significance in the world. And my personal hope is that China will raise its living standards for its population very rapidly so that we see a similar development to that which occurred, say, in Japan, where they moved from a position of super competitiveness to being less competitive, and therefore that would be a more long-term solution to trade imbalances. Okay, we could go on forever about China. It's fascinating, but
I'm sure you will.
Agriculture subsidies, in answer to you, Chairman. Many of us in the Parliament are in agreement about the desirability of ending them, and the problem is how to get there. There are powerful vested agricultural interests in certain parts of Europe, and that is reflected in political decision-making, and that's the reality of it. But let's just point to the changes that have been achieved over the years as we have gradually reduced the spend on agriculture within the European budget, and we've gradually reformed areas of it. Our farmers in the UK, the region I represent, we have a dairy industry, and we have similar problems. But half the farmers say to me, keep the check coming, boy, and half say we don't want any subsidy because we can then make our own minds up about what we do. Now, that's a kind of a difficult message to deal with politically. Free trade area and our experience of moving towards one in the European Union, and it has to be admitted, we haven't really completed our single market. We're well on the way, but there are still barriers to trade internally of some sort or another. And what's the lesson? The first lesson is it's good for growth. Removing the barriers encourages growth. And that's the central message about trade. Michael made an interesting point about persuading our electorates to support the European project. I would say that on the whole there is consent for trading arrangements. Where reservations set in the electorate is if you move beyond that to more elaborate governance structures. And we have arguments, for example, about different tax levels between one member state and another, because that affects investment and migration. We have arguments and debates about invisible barriers which still exist, cultural or legal, both within as well as to the outside world. And of course, we do have vigorous discussions about dumping from outside Europe. So it's quite complicated, but on the whole, it's a good thing because it means growth. Thank you.
And I've got two very quick contributions from Judith and then from Al.
I'm glad Giles tackled the common agricultural policies, which leaves me with a remark I want to make on the economic crisis in the various European member states and how to deal with that. Economics have been writing in, I think, most European newspapers that countries would step out of the euro, the common valuta, or would be thrown out, and it's not going to happen. There's a difference here in opinion between economics and politicians. There's also an economic reason behind why it's not going to happen. The idea that you could devalue your coin when you still have your own coin sounds very attractive. But if you get out of the euro right now, you have to pay your debts off in euros, which is impossible if you devalue your coin. So we're tied into each other, which is not a problem, because every time a member state joined the European Union, trade in the Union got higher, and I'm from the Netherlands, we're making a lot of money out of that. Internal trade is very important to keep economy going. So the whole, we have to rescue the various countries. If we don't rescue them, the other countries with a sound economy will go down as well. It is a forced solidarity with very positive effects, but it leads to a more general debate. We have an economic union with not enough political rules behind it to actually work together. And growth in the European Union, political growth in the Union, always goes via crisis. This crisis leads to an opening up of the possibilities to get our monetary union more into a political union, which of course leads to a lot of political debates.
And finally, Joan, I'll ask Al for a short contribution.
Thank you, Michael. As you probably know, Sweden was not involved in the Second World War, not either in the First World War. So we in Sweden thought we have to be there alone. We do not join EU because we save our future and so on and so on. And Sweden was very prosperous. And the welfare state was always spoken and combined together with Sweden. From Holland, Belgium, and yes, all the other countries, they had experience from the wars, but not Sweden. But my meaning is, and now Sweden, of course, is a member of EU, and we are happy for that, and the majority of the Swedes like the membership. My meaning is that we have to understand that even a Pole, we have mentioned Polish people here before, has the possibility to take decisions which are good for Sweden. Yes, even a Pole and a Portuguese also has the possibility to take decisions which are good for, let us say, Romanians. Nowadays, I find quite often in EU that people say, yes, we accept that if it's good for our country, and that is dangerous. Because we must fight in order to reach the position where we understand what is good for our neighbors in EU or outside EU, that is good for us. We are not there, but let's hope. I mean, this is a mentality. This is a political mentality. We use the word solidarity. But we have to remember that word when we discuss. And then, when we hear mention jobs, and we know that it's a great problem all over Africa, Asia, and even nowadays in Europe. But I just want to mention the possibility with these microloans. Microloans. There is a professor from Bangladesh, Muhammad Yunus. He is well known over the world. And there is a Swede. His name is Percy Barnevik. He has an organization, an NGO, Hand in Hand. And they have arranged about 400,000 microloans, especially in Asia. And they help the women, especially. If you give the possibility to a woman to have a microloan, and she owns something, buys something, and develop it, that is for equality. So microloan is a word I want to put in the discussion when we discuss jobs. Thank you very much.
As I also give Honourable Davidson an opportunity, Kotsi, and I know Honourable Khadebe will want to just add, I must say we're also looking at microloans, and I know that broadly speaking and the role of women in that and co-ops. But having said that, let me allow the team to make their input.
I just want to reflect on something we discussed yesterday, and that was the whole question of the agenda for the G20, and I think there's a bit of a quite ironic that Sarkozy is hosting it, and that's where the main impact of the common agricultural policy is being felt. And it's once again ironic that the emphasis on the G20, one of the emphases in terms of priorities, is indeed going to be trade and development, and more particularly into Africa. And one can have a priority of development in Africa, but if you keep a common agricultural policy in place, there's a contradiction there. And I hope that's rammed home at some stage. The other thing that I find quite interesting is when we talk about regional integration, and more particularly economic integration, of course, there were certain precepts to economic integration, and that was convergence of certain economic criteria, which happened at a given point in time, and that involved inflation rates, growth rates, and current account balances. But what was not taken into account, and that's the lesson that we have to learn, is the fact that there has to be balance in terms of trade in Europe itself, intra-country trade in Europe. Otherwise, you have what has happened, and that was part of the reason for the crisis, and you still have it, and that is you have an imbalance of trade between the northern and the southern countries, which leads to a problem, particularly when you cede monetary policy to an authority which won't allow you to devalue your currency in order to ensure that you can reflect your economies in that context. And that's the problem that you have with Portugal, Greece, Ireland, and Spain. They're trapped in the euro. That's one of the lessons we learned. It's all very well to have, right at the outset, a convergence. But unless that convergence remains in terms of your trade policies and your trade balances, you open yourself to huge problems because you can't actually, you've taken away one of the levers of macroeconomic policy, and that's your monetary policy. You've got your fiscal policy, which can help to a certain extent, but your monetary policy is taken away, so you can't actually have a weapon in order to fight a scenario when there's a trade imbalance. And you're trapped into a scenario where your currency, which essentially should be a weak currency, is tied to a very strong currency, as was the German mark. So that's one of the lessons that we've learned. So you can't just have convergence right at the outset. You've got to make sure that convergence carries on. Otherwise, trade gaps develop, and you have huge problems developing. That's a good lesson.
Yes, I think for all of us, we're cognizant of current leadership within the G20 and the challenges facing us all, and particularly South Africa in the agricultural area. But let me refer now and give you an opportunity to Honourable Kotsi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to say on the issues of microloans, That's a very important and key area for us as South Africans, because even us in South Africa, we have, you know, institutions that presently are going to be put together to try and be more effective in terms of being able to access those loans to the needy. We may not have reached the number of Bangladesh and a professor that we do need to look at. I just want to highlight the fact that Parliament, through this committee, has started looking at the international trade agreements that we have signed in South Africa, because most of those are either done many, many years ago, or others were actually signed when this new democratic government came to place. And they indicate a lot of imbalance in trade. And therefore, as this parliament, we are beginning to look at that. I know this committee had started looking into that. So those are very important, so that the playing field are levels in terms of what is expected of us in South Africa. Therefore, if we want to do good trade, we need trade that are actually balanced. I also, as this committee, we are looking into building relationship with the SADC country parliamentarians, because we feel that sometimes at government level, agreements are being done, and parliamentarians are not taken on board. And they are the most important people in terms of going down and implementing this. Therefore, while you in Europe have got this forum, we need to build that, so that even the IPAS, if Parliament was involved, it could have been dealt in a much more better way in understanding, so that we do not find ourselves in a situation where we actually have to intervene after something has been done. And I think this committee strongly believes, and when we were in last year, we were in Geneva, we did raise an indication that we as parliamentarians need to have that interaction with members of parliament in SADC, so that we are actually proactive in terms of issues that affect us as members of parliament. I thought that I should raise that from the chair.
Thank you, Honourable Kotsi. Honourable Van der Merwe.
Thank you. Many of you will know that I'm new on this committee, so I have some experience in other areas, and I just wanted to refer to a couple of things that have been said by the Honourable Member from Sweden. Percy Barnevik has in fact spent quite a lot of time in South Africa. He was a member of the former president and the current president's International Investment Council, and brought that very creative program to South Africa. Unfortunately, it hasn't been the success here yet that it has been in India and other places. But his model is certainly one that is very exciting for that kind of work, particularly empowering women. I think Comrade Mumpy also referred to some of the initiatives in this country. There's a very successful organization called Women's Development Banking, which provides microloans, and they've had a lot of success in rural areas, but lots more still needs to be done. But Percy certainly is a good friend of South Africa, and one of the problems, I think, was that he tried to work through government, and in fact an organization like that ought to be through civil society, developing from the communities that it serves. So that is a very interesting something that we need to pursue. I also wanted to support what Mumpy had said about the involvement of other players in regional integration issues, because I think the commitment of government is there, but it requires a much more broader buy-in from all the stakeholders in the various countries, including parliaments, and including finances and financial institutions. I think that's something we can pursue jointly as well. I just wanted to mention also something which is, and I'm not sure, I'm not aware of what has been discussed fully in the last couple of days, But there is something exciting that has been happening in South Africa, which I think is where the European partners are going to play a very important role, and that is the development of a South Africa Development Partnership Agency. We are spending a lot of money as a country in supporting initiatives on the African continent in particular for growth and development. The figure is something in the billions of rand. And so our country has decided it needs a more coherent and a coordinated approach to that development assistance partnership. Now, we have looked, and when I was in Brussels with another hat on, I discussed at some length with many of the colleagues in the European Union what we're looking is to approach the matter with a kind of trilateral cooperation approach, so that funding that is channeled into the Southern African or the African region generally can sometimes be best effected through kind of trilateral cooperation through this kind of thing. So that's another thing where I think in terms of development, our partners in the European Parliament can usefully have a dialogue with us over. That thing is not quite finalised yet, but we can usefully have a dialogue about how best to leverage additional funding and expertise through the various development partners, both here and in the Union. Thank you.
About that. Thank you very much. I just wanted to check with the Honourable Njikalana, who was with Trade and Industry until recently. Very sorry to lose him, but very happy he became Chair of Energy. And I know the energy issues, particularly in relation to another cross-cutting matter of, you know, climate change and carbon control and so on the coal, issues like that. And you may as part of this in a very short space of time, because I know time is running sharply against us, but I would like him just to comment here and add his piece.
Thank you, Chair. And once again to my colleagues from Europojo, Kalispera, Guten Morgen. The issue of energy is actually one of the things that compels me to drop other things and come here. Although I've recognized that in the agenda that may have been handled under climate change a day or two before. So more than anything, the highlight I would make here is the linkages between energy, climate change, as well as global trade. Because at the end of the day, amongst other things, there will be, as it has been agreed under the UNFCCC activities or the climate change conferences, that developed countries will assist developing countries, amongst other things, on technology transfer. And obviously, facilitation of technology transfer to developing countries brings prospects of stronger trading partners. And that definitely spills over to WTO activities, whether generally or specifically within Doha round. So in a sense, Chair, my appeal is that without being specific on that, I would like in future that those issues be given, you know, specific consideration. I must confess at this stage in time, I'm less prepared to say much in detail. Safe to say that we did, through my attempts, we did meet the European counterparts in Cancun with Honourable Lulu Johnson, Nobo Dilange, and the rest of the group. And I hope as we move along, we will definitely integrate all the decisions we took in Europe, in Cancun, with the work that's being done by this platform as well. Because what we did there is not by any means separate from building the relations. It's literally, in fact, an extension. And I trust and hope that we will ensure that all that work gets integrated here. For now, I'll just would like to highlight those things. But also, I think just a small additional point, Chair. It also would be helpful that we ensure continuity from meeting to meeting. Because as I see here, I'm seeing familiar faces. And it would have been helpful to also, I don't know whether that was done earlier, to have just considered what we discussed last year when I was still wearing the old cap, and see how advancing and, you know, and improving on certain areas. Because what I sense is that there are common positions that we have with our European counterparts, and we should actually explore how we advance them. And on the other hand, those contentious issues, we work as a strategy on how we, you know, handle them. Thank you for now.
Thank you very much. We will just acknowledge the Chair of Science and Technology and the team. As he said yesterday, the chairperson in Corbo, that the team would be meeting this morning, but that they would bring them along, the committee in full. But we do want to close off this particular session. And I know there was a great engagement with him, a very robust and positive and passionate engagement yesterday as South Africa's bid and its capacity with the SCAR project was communicated to you. So some members of his team had joined us earlier as you saw them coming in, and he has just joined us. But I'll do a proper introduction just after Honourable Khadebe has spoken, so that we just close off this section. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chairperson. Again, as the whip of trade and industry, I really appreciate the engagement we had this morning. I think that it lays the basis for future engagement and then making the world a better, giving the world a better chance to create a better world order. So as I said initially, that the only way of fighting underdevelopment and poverty is through trade. Really, we appreciate your commitment that you are going to open up the visa issue, are going to deal with it, and then the issue of farming subsidies that you are considering that. I think that one is positive. But what we also want to say is that as my colleague, Honorable Njikalana, has said from energy, is that one of the things which is destroying our continent is the issue of climate change. In the province where I'm coming from, is an agricultural province, whereby we had the rains we have never had before, in such a way that our own farmers could not even harvest the wheat. The wheat is there in the field, is ready, but the implements cannot get in to take it out. So it means that very soon we are going to have the wheat deficit in the whole world. So it means that the bread prices will be going up. So what I want to appeal for is that as we move from Copenhagen to Cancun to Durban in December, we are still going to rely upon you guys, that you are going to support us so that we come with a better resolution around that, which is actually binding. That's why that whatever influence we have, whatever corner of the world, will appeal for you to use it so that we give a chance to an African child, so that an African child can sleep at a night with a full stomach rather than sleeping with an empty stomach. Chairperson, thanks a lot.
But the key issues that we wanted to communicate in relation to our delegation here and relations with the European Union, there is never sufficient time to do this. And that was one of the reasons, as I said yesterday, why we welcomed the opportunity to engage with one of your committees at the time, I think it was the trade, was it international trade from the European Union, the actual committee. And I think in the same vein, you may wish to encourage from the European Union side a relationship to be developed across the board, not simply with trade and industry. You must have an agriculture committee, you know, as I see it. You must possibly have something that deals with science and technology and so on. But just having said that, Michael, co-chair, you met the chair yesterday of science and technology when we did have that opportunity for a 15-minute engagement on the issue. And somewhere, I know he was here. He's just coming in there. But I think the important thing is he brought in a group of, in fact, the committee, the multi-party committee, not because it is actually on our program at all, as you see, it isn't. The program is very tight on budget day. But at least I think we could introduce the members to the European Union delegation, and perhaps, Chairperson, you may wish to do that.
Okay, thank you very much, co-chair. Well, I thought that we thought that it's important that we bring the committee because we deal commonly with matters of science and technology also with the European Union, as we discussed yesterday. I will allow the members to introduce themselves because starting from this side, members of Science and Technology Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, everybody. I am Zintenda in the Portfolio Committee of Science and Technology. I am an ANC member. Thank you.
Good morning, colleagues. I am Obi Mujumi, member of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, deployed to Parliament by the African National Congress.
Good morning. I'm Marion Shin. I'm Democratic Alliance spokesperson on science and technology. And it's great to be here because I know that we have a lot of collaboration projects with Europe, and particularly on the astronomy area where we've got, you obviously had the SKA talk yesterday, but also the SALT telescope, the Southern African Largest Telescope, is now active and live, and so obviously there's a lot of cooperation with the projects that are being done there. Also coming up really soon from Finland is our new ship, our oceanographic research ship, which is being built now. Hopefully will be launched next year, and hopefully there will be a lot of European type equipment on there sponsored to help us play our very, very active and important role in global change.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Lindelwa Dunjwa. I'm the whip of science and technology, and I'm coming from the African National Congress. It's nice to be with you, and I hope we'll learn more. Thank you.
I'm Sana Plaiki, a member of the Portfolio Committee Science and Technology, deployed by the Congress of the People. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm Ellen Lai, in this Committee of Science and Technology. I'm deployed by the ANC, and I'm from the Northern Cape, where I think most of this discussion is revolving on. Thank you.
I just forgot to mention that that's my secretary of the committee, Shanaz Isaacs. I think you can move around so they can see you. Oh, on the assistant, sorry. Can you rise? Thank you very much, Chairman.
I think as we come on to the final item, which would be the way forward almost and how we continue, this is certainly one of the issues we would like to factor in. That there are areas that, if we just took at some of our earlier discussions and dialogue, we said, good heavens, when we even drew up the program, Egypt wasn't quite on the radar screen then, you know, in this respect. And we were simply looking at some impending elections towards the end of the year. And by the time we sat down here, there had been remarkable changes and quite radical. And the same as we move forward, we would want to really emphasize trade and industry works very, very closely with science and technology on a number of fronts. And for that matter, the whole European Union dialogue, if you like, interparliamentary itself, and sharing this with us, we've always, from time to time, I believe, Allah, what you initially were about to say, viva the, rather than visa, essay, waiver, you know, issues that may appear to be sometimes outside, but which are very, very important. We raised FIFA, I remember, two meetings ago, and it was on that basis that we also shared with you our earnest appeal that we can persuade the European Parliament to find their way clear to understanding what motivates, as the chairperson of Science and Technology indicated, what is informing the South Africans moving and wanting to really concretize and win that particular bid. It is not simply because we may be saying we can do X or Y and Z. It has a much broader African regional continental vision. And in our exchanges, we seem, I believe, to have shared some of that, and that we may not agree on every point. But throughout this, even here with trade and industry, we've actually highlighted some mutual challenges. You're facing high unemployment, relatively speaking, for Europe. You're facing issues that are challenging within the financial issues, etc. We don't want to go around this issue and that issue, etc. We're facing key international issues. And I expect as we begin to close this off a little bit later, newer things would be happening in the north of Africa for that particular matter. And on the European radar screen, we may hear a little bit more about critical financial issues and deficit issues that rock or appear to rock the financial stability of, you know, the European Union and so on, and that kind of thing. So I certainly, as you know, as we move to this, we need to leave ourselves 10 minutes. I will just ask the Chair of Science and Technology, and really to say a small inyani, just to indicate that you would be in agreement with us bringing you more on board in the next program. Mm. But really, we're closing.
Well, I don't think that I will waste even the time because we had an exchange yesterday with the colleagues, and I have partly brief, but obviously we are still here today. We are here until the until the end of this program, which I think, because after lunch is a budget speech, so we are with you until the end now. So we will exchange as we go along. Yesterday, many people have already spoken what is our main priority now, the SKA project, and that's it. Thank you very much.
All right, from our side, certainly on that issue, Co-Chair Michael, it would be very useful if we could begin to move backwards just to
some of these issues I know which were left over in some instance, not really issues, were closing issues such as, what was it, you know, when we spoke about continuing role and purpose, and we said we would link that to the new agenda and so on and so forth, and try to capture this, if you like, also in a closing statement and so on and so forth. And before I continue, I really want to thank our Whip of Trade and Industry, Honourable Khadebe, for bringing the team across. Thank you very much. They are welcome to stay. And I also want to say thank you to the Chair of Science and Technology and the team. You are welcome to stay, but we will be getting on with the rest of the program now. Yes. Well, we will...
Joan, if you will allow me a quick response, and just to say I think this has been a very valuable session. It's also been very valuable for us to listen, because as we know in politics, sometimes our CO2 emissions go through the roof and we don't help climate change at all. So I think it's been very good to listen. I want to share with all of the members some what I think is some welcome and good news that I've just had from the President of the European Parliament's office. He wanted us to be the first to know and to convey to you that he, President Buzek, intends to travel to South Africa in December for the COP17 Climate Change Conference, I think thereby signalling the intention and the support of the European Parliament, which is essential. I was at the breakfast meeting with President Zuma when President Buzek announced that he would like to travel, and I think it is reinforcing the strategic partnership and our strategic alliance with South Africa that the event will help to reinforce. There are many questions which I won't go on now, other than to say the dialogue is essential. The engagement of members of Parliament in all of these decisions and the review of international agreements is vital, because we have to let our governments and our executives know when they have our support and when they do not. There has to be a consensus. And finally, from my side, equally we see the role of science and technology as the spur to green jobs, the green economy, diversification. As the Honourable Ian thankfully didn't go on too much about the role of President Sarkozy, because I would have been placed in the position of having to defend France once again. I will say this, and it goes back to what Honourable Harris said at the very beginning. What are the lessons that can be learned? You talked about the economic problem. One of the lessons that can be learned is that you have rules, but if the rules are not enforced, then the ones who break the rules are ultimately the ones who will suffer. Convergence criteria, public sector borrowing, the deficit, those rules were ignored and they came back to haunt us. And the key word here is, if you look at Italy, if you look at Portugal, Ireland, Spain, Greece, there was not enough diversification within the economies. Ireland and Spain, in particular, were construction-focused economies. When the money started to dry up, they were hit, and the diversification, which could have actually supported and protected them, was not there. Now, that's enough from my side, but I wanted to say that before the committee's left, and also take back the, I think, eminently sensible idea that we should encourage committees from the European Parliament to come here and meet with their counterparts in your committee structures.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Michael. We're all looking at the clock there, and certainly those who do wish to leave may leave, not the call group, because we just need to close off on this particular point here. But others may, if they so wish. Co-chair, I think the issue is really, you know, trying to relate the points that
over and over again, we have raised often on about where are we going. I think even members of your own delegation here have said, yo, we'll never get through this, you know, on and on and on. And then you say, well, it's only the title sort of unpacked, etc. That's not really the point. I think the point in discussions with our own group and delegation would appear to be we do need a greater and a deeper cohesion. Now, I say this and then I look around on my right, having heard some statements probably in that direction from yourself, Honourable Davidson at one of our briefings not recently, Honourable Manana down there as well. Where are we going? Do we simply come here with salt and pepper set and everyone starts, you know, salt and peppering whatever's in front of them and we get this long list, you know? And in the final, you know, the buck stops in one sense with the chair of particular delegations, the co-chairs. But I also think at this broader meeting that we have with the delegations on board, we may need to say to ourselves, we believe, of course there will be new items from time to time. We understand that, I think. The same way, you know, with North Africa, hardly have predicted that, you know, a year ago or whatever when we were, or 3 months when we were trying to do an agenda. So if the principle, though, is taken into account, what remains for us some of the critical issues? South Africa, the European Union. And for us, the critical issues are not far different from yours. They remain and remain the whole issue of development and a proper development, not dependency type of development, etc. The recognition that South Africa is part of Africa in the same way that member states, it's not simply Romania or Germany or France or Italy, it is the European Union that is there. We certainly, it may have been a little visionistic to suddenly have said Africa and the European Union, but what I'm really conveying is that we are part of a continent and a region. And the final thing perhaps linked into that is addressing poverty, which is more prevalent, it certainly we believe, more high on the radar here in Africa than it is perhaps in Europe. Education, skills, which you have more than an accumulation of in Europe. We don't have this accumulation of strategic skills. But of course, all of that, jobs, unemployment, but again, you can link that to the two others. But it's the issue of, can you achieve that? Peace and stability, and all these, you need peace and stability to develop. We all agree. You also need good governance. What is good governance? Do we have share the same understanding? The role of parliaments. I think in passing, the Honourable Ndikalana was raising the issue of the important role of parliament. And I think even members who spoke on trade and industry were raising that issue again. Parliament, constitutionally in our country, Parliament has a key role to play. Has it always operated in that manner, or apparently to others outside our country? Perhaps not. But in this term, there is a clear directive coming from the President, from the Speaker, the Honourable Max Sisulu, that Parliament is the key institution in the country notwithstanding that this is a constitutional democracy, and that if we hand over our authority, well, we will reap the consequences of having done that. So, you know, I look at yourself, Ian, on the other side. I look at Honourable Manana down at the bottom. And, of course, Honourable Williams, if you wanted to add anything to that.
Honourable Co-Chair, if you will allow me, I think the pressure of time on you and on us means that we need, with respect, to conclude our part of the session. I don't think we demur from anything that you've said. We have a strategic partnership. Our approach must be strategic. I actually think many things on the agenda, but we've come away with concrete plans on how we will deal with some of these issues. So there's every good reason why we should come and have these face-to-face discussions. There is no need now to draw up the next agenda. We believe that there is purpose, there is continuity. I would suggest that we just need at some point before we depart to hear from your secretariat as to the dates that we have proposed in November. And then we can draw up an agenda which is general. It is a provisional agenda. There will be recurring items, I'm sure, such as climate change, Durban, the issues on racism, peace, security, the racism declaration at the special summit at the UN next year. So there will be recurring items. So I think we just... between us, probably need to close off the session and meet later on. I think it's
just one thing. We've really done that quick consultation, and we haven't even communicated this with the secretariat. But November is totally out, the speaker's office has said, and so is October, mid-October onwards. Due to the entire budget program, the adjustments, the new budget coming before us, etc., etc., etc. So what was suggested, but I know we'll discuss this outside the meeting, is August, possibly September. He said he was not allowing any for it to continue in November. No, I'm just making that
clear. Once we get into the calendar, August is completely out of the question for us. September is probably out of the question as the only date. But I've been offered a date here. If we can't allow others to come to some conclusion over this, then I don't think we've got the wherewithal to do it ourselves. But we'll sort it.
Note, Honourable Co-Chair and your delegation, and indeed our own, we have finalised a draft statement which we won't read out here because one would like to discuss it with you personally before any signatures. And I can only say this has been an incredibly robust engagement, and maybe that is the way to move, but that we do need greater cohesion within the agenda itself, and I take part responsibility for that, what has arisen. But I'm sure we can move forward positively. I'm certainly very pleased, and I see the Dean of the Consul of the Diplomatic Corps also with us here today, you're welcome, of saying thank you once again for being with us, taking the time, and always all members of your delegation being here promptly to participate actively, openly, and transparently. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair. It's been a real joy, and I echo everything you've said about the robustness, and can we thank you for your hospitality and the generosity in which you have all entered into this debate, and the generosity in which you have co-chaired. Thank you very much.